And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 824. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We head to the Windy City to talk Chicago Cubs baseball. Always a fun team. Always a team that should be in the mix, especially for real life and fantasy. Lots to go around there. And in order to help me break it down, as a friend of mine, a friend of the show, she has been awesome enough to join us each year of this fun endeavor that I decide to do every offseason. And she is one might say she bleeds Cubby Blue, as she writes at the Bleeds Cubby Blue. She also writes at Baseball HQ. She does some stuff. She's all over the place. She's just busy. You can find her on Twitter at BCB underscore Sarah, on Blue Sky at BCB Sarah, and pretty much on all social media somewhere in that realm of combinations if you're looking for it. Sarah Sanchez, how you doing, my friend?
You know, it's cold here, like remarkably, bone-chillingly, shatteringly cold. But other than that, I can't complain. The Cubs are more interesting than they have been pretty much every year, except maybe last year when they made the big move for Kyle Tucker and was just at Cubs convention, just got to spend a bunch of time really celebrating this team. It was the 10-year anniversary of the 2016 Cubs. So Cubs convention really had the reunion feel to it, which was great. So yeah, as soon as the weather clears up, I'll be good. But thanks for having me on, man. It's always good to see you.
Always great to see you and talk to you. You actually got into Cubs deal, because I saw like all over, you know, X people complaining about the lines, we can't get in, and because they oversold it, all this stuff. And I'm like, usually I see you post this. I missed it somewhere because it seemed like it was crowded.
So they definitely oversold it. I wrote about that as one of my pieces covering the convention. And I don't have actual numbers on this. I have no sourcing on it. But I will say the good people of Reddit noticed that last year, the number of people on the app sort of maxed out at about 3,500. And this year, Friday night during opening ceremonies, there were 8,000 people on the app. So that is not the right amount of people for that venue. My read of the Sheraton is that their biggest ballroom, which is where they hold the opening ceremonies and all that type of stuff, seats about 4,000. So if they sold 8,000 tickets, then they knew well that a handful of people were not getting in. I actually didn't get into the opening ceremonies. It's the first time I've not gotten into the opening ceremonies. I've been at every Cubs convention since 2017. But I usually go for the panels Saturday morning anyway. So I got there early to listen to Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins talk. By the way, can I just say, it was the most relaxed and chill I have ever seen Jed Hoyer in my life. He was literally wearing a Hoyer Bears jersey, which,
wow,
on brand. Wow. And he was kind of telling jokes and talking about the time he was a bat boy for the Reds when he was a kid. Like, it was kind of endearing. And I think that getting to the playoffs and making some big moves got a monkey off of Jed's back.
Yeah, because I know you've always been a huge Jed Hoyer fan. So that must have been real weird for you sitting there going, wait a minute, we still haven't won it, Jed. What are we doing here? Like, the job's not done. But to your point, he was getting ridiculed for quite a long time and nothing was really happening. And plus, the last few years, and we're going to get into this now, is there's been a ton of like big names leaving the team, like bring them back, not bring them back, who's going to get traded, so on and so forth. And that's something that he had to deal with every offseason and usually didn't work out as well as people hoped. Most of them left, unfortunately. So that has been a point of contention among Cubs Nation, I should say, from the outside looking in for me. And also, lastly, watching the Cubs convention stuff, the reunion, seeing Rizzo and company rolling around, I love Rizzo. Awesome. I know you guys too. Like, Rizzo's great. So,
awesome.
So it was fun to watch, like, from their eyes going through it all. And, like, you know, the Giants won their World Series and they come back and do their reunions. But the Cubs, like, those players, they go into the people. Like, it's different. Like, they're out there. Like, they were in the bleachers for Rizzo's, like, deal and they go downtown. Like, they don't care. They're like right in the mix.
I have to tell you, having Rizzo back in the fold is so great. I was, of course, at Rizzo's party in the bleachers the day he came back. I was there with my friend Ken Schultz, who I go to like all of the big Cubs days with. And number one, the craziest thing I have ever seen at a baseball game, and I go to a lot of baseball games, was Moises Ballesteros hitting his first career home run to Anthony Rizzo, bounced off his hands in the bleachers. I have never in my life seen anything like that. I doubt it has ever happened. It was it was wild, man. Like, it was just like one of those statistical flukes. Like, how does that even happen? But no, man, Rizzo's a man of the people. He understands how great it is in Chicago. And he had a quote actually at CubsCon that I think is apt. He said, you know, there's no better place to be on a summer day than Wrigley Field. And that is factual. And the fact that he can say that, having played for the Yankees, he was in the Red Sox minor league system. Like, the man is not, he is exposed to the big teams, and Wrigley Field is where it's at. So hope you can get to Chicago sometime soon. I would love to hang out in the bleachers with you at Wrigley, but yeah. Rizzo back in the fold is elite.
Yeah, that's my next goal. I've been to Wrigley. I've done good seats behind like the dugout. I don't play it. The bleachers are obviously on my list of things to do one of these days. So hopefully sooner than later. I saw Rizzo just got signed to NBC's broadcast, so that'll
be good. It's gonna be so good.
Yeah, it'll be great. So,
so good.
Let's move on to, well, not yet 2026. My first question I ask: what were your thoughts on the 2025 season for the Cubs? Obviously, it didn't end the way every team wants. Only one team gets that. It's usually this bad team that wears the same colors as you guys. But how do you think the season as a whole went for the Cubs?
Honestly, better than expected. I thought the Kyle Tucker move really made the team better. What the Cubs have been missing the last few years is an elite bat up the middle. And what they really hadn't had since 2021 was that dude, like capital D hitter who you were going to fear that you could build your whole lineup around. Kyle Tucker gave them that. It pushed Seiya Suzuki down a little bit, gave him a chance to just DH and not worry. Right field at Wrigley Field is a really tricky place to play. The wind is terrible and you're running into a brick wall. The corners there are kind of weird and can get blind. And Seiya's had some moments that hadn't looked great out there. So him being able to not have to worry about that as much, you let Kyle Tucker play right field. He sort of solidifies that lineup. And what people forget, because Kyle Tucker did get injured long about June last season, fell off a cliff a little bit. Through June, he was exactly who you've always expected Kyle Tucker to be. And it seemed from my angle like he lost faith a little bit in the Cubs medical staff to get him back. And it became clear at some point they were not going to come to terms on an extension. And he was just like, well, I'm just going to ride out the thread here, get to my next job and call it. And so, you know, say what, like, there was a lot of chatter at Cubs convention as to, oh, well, Kyle Tucker's not that great, whatever. Those people are wrong. Kyle Tucker is still an elite bat and you should be drafting him. Honestly, I think he's a deal right now where he goes and drafts. But I hear people on the, you know, he didn't have that like edge to him. He didn't have that like what you knew Wilson Contreras always wanted to win. You knew Anthony Rizzo always wanted to win. Like, Anthony Rizzo was out there playing on a sprained ankle down the stretch in 2019 when they were fighting for a playoff spot. You did not get the impression Kyle Tucker was going to go out there on a sprained ankle to like carry the team on his back, is what I'll say.
Yep. No, I'm glad you said that, because I've been a Kyle Tucker stan for a long time. So I've always defended the flag when people say this, that, and the other, because he's hurt or this, whatever. Like, the dude's great when he's out there, and some of them are pretty fluky injuries, so we'll let that one ride and see where it goes. Let's get into 2026 now, where, again, this team is still pretty darn good. So it'll be interesting to see how real life and fantasy both have their impacts for us here. Let's just go down the bats. We'll start with Michael Busch, who coming off a monster season, 34 home runs, 261 average. This time last year, Sarah, we were worried that he might platoon with Justin Turner. That didn't last very long. That was a quick dismissal. And right now, Michael Busch, you know, he's earned it, but his ADP is up to around 114-ish, give or take. So how are you feeling about Michael Busch? Last year, he was cheap. Now you have to pay for it, and it's coming off a monster season.
I actually think it's still pretty cheap for 34 home runs and a guy who hits for decent average and an excellent lineup. Michael Busch is one of my favorite targets at first base. But I will say the platoon risk with him is kind of real. And when the Cubs signed Tyler Austin out of NPB, I'm like, they say, and the statement at Cubs convention was, Michael Busch is going to get a chance to start against tough lefties. I will believe it when I see it, because he has a WRC plus of 151 against righties last season. It was 81 against lefties. That is a 70 percentile split on the damage that he does by platoon handedness. And I don't know why you're signing Tyler Austin at all if he's not going to take some of those at bats from Michael Busch at some point in time. I hope I'm proven wrong, because I think Michael Busch should be playing every single day. I'm not sure how he's ever going to get better at hitting tough lefties if he doesn't get a shot. But like I said, the words out of Craig Counsell's mouth were that Michael Busch is going to play every day. I will believe that when I see him not pull Michael Bush with a lefty reliever on the hill in the seventh, which I have seen. I've seen this movie for 2 years now.
Yeah, man, you would definitely, you have seen it. That is very true. So, yeah, part of me wants to be like, okay, just leave him out there. But the Austin signing is bizarre, like insanely bizarre to your point. Like, what? There's nowhere else for him on this team. So why would you bring him in except to potentially platoon with Michael Bush? You're 100%. You're on the button there. I'm just like, it stinks because the guy proved he can play every day last season.
And I will say with Michael Bush, it's not like he's going to sit for, like, he might get a day off when they're facing a real tough lefty or something, right? Yeah. But like, it's more that he loses those at bats late in games because they pull him in the sixth or seventh when some lefty reliever comes in, and now you've got an inning and a half of Tyler Austin. And it's like, okay, so you're talking about, I don't know, probably 50 plate appearances over the course of a season, but it's a reason that he will not hit that 600, 650 mark that you're going to get from like an Ian Happ. And I just think people need to keep that in mind with Michael Bush.
That's a great point. New Chicago Cub, and he's got one of the cutest little kids on the planet, Alex Bregman. Like, I'm sorry, but that was just some great, great footage there. Whoever the Cubs PR team is, I know it wasn't on purpose, but it worked out beautifully. Bregman, a little bit of an injury last year with the Red Sox, but before he got hurt, was raking it. And he's just one of the most consistent guys year after year. It's 20 to 25 home runs. He hits for an okay average. Like, everything's great with Alex Bregman. Now, people have been concerned potentially with left field and Wrigley. That has been a thing, but you never know. ADP is around 125, 130 for Bregman right now. What are your thoughts on Bregman, your new Chicago Cub?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, it's an open question in my mind as to whether Bregman is a big enough bat to sort of fill that Kyle Tucker role. Bregman is a probably better player in the sense that he's a really good third baseman with the bat, but he's not as good of a hitter as Kyle Tucker is. Like, you're not ever looking to see like a 170, 180 WRC plus from Alex Bregman. In fact, I was looking at this for Seiya Suzuki, but Bregman is like right in the same wheelhouse. Since 2022, Alex Bregman has had like a 126 WRC plus. Seiya Suzuki has had a 127 WRC plus. I'm just not sure you can replace the offensive production of a Kyle Tucker with an Alex Bregman. That said, he raises the floor on the position they were weakest at last year. They got exactly zero WAR out of third base, and Matt Shaw was streaky at best. His second half had some reasons for optimism. His first half was apocalyptically bad in terms of his approach at the plate. So I'm not out forever on Matt Shaw. I think that he's got some potential, like that's a mixed rookie year, but you're glad he ended it on a high note. However, Alex Bregman is much better than Matt Shaw. That said, I am not worried about the thing that most people are worried about with Alex Bregman, which is the power dip. And I was at first because Bregman has that same pulled fly ball trick that Isak Paredes does. And Wrigley Field is the deepest left field corner in sports. The difference between Bregman and Paredes, though, is that Bregman's hit chart kind of extends across all of left field, whereas Paredes is really needs that corner. And Wrigley Field was just devastating for him because of that. Bregman actually gains some home runs in the alleys compared to Fenway and compared to Minute Maid. When you look at his hit chart overlaid with Wrigley Field, I think the wind is still probably an issue, but I don't think he's going to lose home runs immediately. Now, I think 2 to 3 years down the line, Bregman probably goes from being a 25 home run guy to an 18 home run guy. Like, as he ages, I don't think his power will age particularly well at Wrigley. But for 2026, Bregman is probably as good of a hitter as he was last year, maybe a little better. One of the things when I was digging into him right after the trade that kind of shocked me, his slash line was better away from Fenway than it was at Fenway. It's not like he was getting some huge BABIP increase from the monster or anything like that. That was kind of a stunner for me. So I think he's going to be great. He's obviously going to play every day. I'm not terribly concerned about him losing a ton of power at Wrigley next season or even in 2027. I think in 2028, though, I'm a little concerned.
Yeah, as things age, as we all know, things change. And see where that goes. But to your point about Bregman, yeah, like, with Wrigley, I agree, because like I looked at that was the initial thing everybody complained about, so that's why I brought it up. But I looked at the spray charts, and again, those are, you know, he still has to do it, but he's done it for quite a few years. But I also saw someone, I was looking for the tweet now, I couldn't find it. They put out some numbers the other day that were really good. It was like there's like a percentage of home runs to left field, and then he showed like Houston, which was like one of the best, and obviously that made sense. But then it showed Boston was like a negative 12 impact because of the monster. You have to elevate it more, which Bregman doesn't do.
Yes.
And then Wrigley was like neutral to lefty, yes. start to left-handed or right-handed hitters. So it made a lot more sense when they broke it down, because you start visualizing like, okay, wait a minute, actually, like this does make sense. To your point, wanted to throw that out there as well. But I love Bregman. I think third base stinks. So if you want to take your chance and you don't worry about steals, it's not a ceiling play, but it's a heck of a floor. That's what you're getting with Alex Bregman.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I didn't see the tweet you're talking about, but I will say that Brett Taylor over at Bleacher Nation did the work of overlaying Bregman's 2025 hit chart at Wrigley Field. And you can just see the gains he's going to get in the alleys. That is linked in my piece, the Alex Bregman signing by the numbers. So if you look that up at Bleed Cubby Blue, you'll find it. Or if you look up Brett, great follow on all the socials for Cub stuff. But so, I mean, I'm not worried about Bregman's power this year. I'm not worried about it for a little bit. But I don't know how it ages when the wind's howling in. Like Wrigley can be a mean place to play.
Yep, I remember you mentioning 2 years ago or last year on the show about how the weather just shifted the entire dynamics for a full season like we hadn't seen before. While we're on the Bregman subject, before we go farther, what's going to happen to Matt Shaw?
So the word at CubsCon was that he's going to be like a super utility guy and that he will get some reps in the outfield to give guys days off there. He's already doing work in the outfield in Arizona. There's been video of that coming out of the Cubs complex, which is great. The thing that I worry about a little bit here, though, is playing time, because, you know, Nico Horner was asked about this straight up in one of the reporter scrums at CubsCon of, oh, is it going to be good for you to get a day off so Matt Shaw can play some second? And Nico was like, no, I'm playing every day. And you just kind of look around the Cubs at the diamond. It's like, I don't know, Alex Bregman plays every day. Dansby Swanson plays every day. Nico Horner plays every day. Ian Happ plays every day. Seiya Suzuki plays every day. I'm like, who? Where are these at-bats coming from for Matt Shaw? I am not sure.
Yep, I agree. That's why that was the initial thing. Everyone's like, utility, and doesn't take a rocket scientist. Look at that starting lineup real quick and be like, maybe one or two games a week, maybe. Like, it's going to be tough to fill that in to make it worthwhile.
It is.
Let's go to Ian Happ, who I know you're a big fan of. If you're a Cubs fan, you should be a fan of Ian Happ, because all he has done is just be an awesome Cub. He, you know, consistently hits 240 to 250. We've got the power, a little bit of speed, just great stuff all around. Free agent season, so it might be the last time we hear, like, are they going to trade Ian Happ? It's a yearly tradition. ADP is around 180, though. Doesn't cost you much at all, which I think is super cheap. What are your thoughts on Happ?
Ian Happ is my last outfielder I feel really good about in a draft. If I am getting my third or fourth outfielder and it's Ian Happ or Brian Reynolds, I'm really happy. Because those are guys who are, they're solid floor. Just like you said, he's going to hit 240. He's going to give you 25 home runs. He's going to play every day. It's not going to be flashy. I think that if you were listening to our friends, Eno, Saris, and DVR over on Rates and Barrel, it's like, he's the fancy oatmeal, right? Like some oatmeal with some brown sugar and some raisins. It's like, but it's not flashy. It's not Kyle Tucker. It's nothing. There's no Seiya Suzuki 30 home run ceiling there, but it's fine. And it's going to be great for you. And it's going to be in a really good lineup. I am curious what the Cubs are going to do with Ian Happ. I think Ian Happ would love to be a Cub forever. He's obviously adored in the left field area at Wrigley. He's one of these guys. He like throws up a $100 bill a few times a year and buys drinks for everybody in the well. He just knows everybody out there. I just have to tell this story because it was my favorite moment at the ballpark last year. But my oldest childhood friend brought her 9-year-old to Wrigley Field for the first time last year. We went to see the Cubs and the Phillies play in an April game. It was the game the Cubs won. There's huge rain delay. But part of the reason we went to the well in left field is I know the guys out there. That's where I sit when I go out in the bleachers. And I knew that she would get a ball. Like I was 100% certain that Frieda was leaving that game with a ball for me and happen. She had one by the fourth inning. She was cradling it like it was the most important thing in her universe. It was incredible. She's going to be a Cubs fan for life because of it. And Ian Happ is that dude. And there's a lot of character and quality and team heart there that I don't know if it shows up on the spreadsheets where the Cubs make extension decisions. And I'm very curious what's going to happen with him.
Yeah. Just from an outsider's perspective, like it seems like it doesn't show up on their spreadsheets because they should have extended him by now is the thing. It's like, that's the sad part. Cause, we live in an era, Sarah, you and I have been baseball fans long enough where most players, at least franchise players, stayed with the teams forever. That doesn't happen anymore. Like, it's very, very rare, unfortunately. And to your point, Rizzo, it should have been a lifelonger. We'll forget that little other pinstripe version of him. And like Hap, there's that world where they all should kind of live in it. And you can't have them all, but there's some you should have sticking around for sure. Because look, he's got, you mentioned what he does with the well, which I didn't know about, but he's got that. But he's got the coffee company in Chicago. He's got like the Cubs podcast he does. Like all these things. Is it just all going to go away? Like, what are we doing here? He's like, he's embedded himself into it. Like we talked about Rizzo at the beginning of the show. So, yes.
Yeah, totally.
And too much sense.
The last thing I'll say about that, I know from a, you know, front office management perspective, having left field open as a spot you can fill is attractive, right? Like part of why they just traded Owen Casey for Edward Cabrera. Casey's a really interesting hitter. He could totally hit 30 home runs in the majors, and I wouldn't be surprised by it. But they didn't have a spot for Owen Casey. Like, Owen Casey is not a better bet than Ian Happ, and he's not a better bet than Seiya Suzuki, and he can't play center. So they, you know, looking at Casey and Kevin Alcantara, it's like Casey is the expendable one there. It would be interesting for them to have a corner outfield spot open to try to fill with a Teoscar Hernandez or a Kyle, you know, well, I guess not Kyle Schwarber anymore. He's kind of a DH for life, but you know what I mean? Like there's guys you can put in the corners. And when you don't have those corner spots open, it kind of limits your flexibility and free agency, but I'm not sure any of those guys is going to give you what Ian Happ has given the city of Chicago. And I hate seeing them mess around with that.
I agree. All right. Let's talk Seiya Suzuki, who I love. Most love. Seiya coming off a 2025 season where he got back to 151 games is most since coming to the mainland. 32 home runs, no steals though. He had 5 steals, but I was after 16 or kind of wondering where he'd be. And then batting average down to 245, which is a big drop from the previous 2 years, but there's some things that kind of suggest why that took place and could be fluky. Seiya's ADP is around 105. I've always been a humongous Seiya Suzuki fan. What are your thoughts on Seiya?
I mean, I think this is a bold take, but I'm pretty confident about it. I am pretty sure Seiya Suzuki is the best right-handed hitter to come over from Japan. And we do not talk about him that way, but we should. He is, in the time that he has been in Major League Baseball, he's had a WRC plus of 127. Now, admittedly, some limited seasons because of injury, and he's been a bit streaky. He's struggled to adapt as the league has adapted to him sometimes. But there's a couple of reasons I'm really optimistic about Seiya Suzuki heading into 2026. The first is the automatic ball strike system that the umpires will be using. Seiya Suzuki gets more balls called strikes against him than almost any major leaguer in the sport. I'm not saying this anecdotally. Like Cubs, the people who watch the Cubs closely have seen it, and I've never understood it. It's almost like they're treating him like, early in his career, I was like, are you giving him the rookie treatment? Like, this is crazy. He is not a rookie, but he has an incredibly good eye, and he is going to get a ton of balls that were previously called strikes as actual balls with the tighter zone. I think that's going to help his on-base percentage if you're in an OBP league, but I also think it's going to help his power because he's going to have better pitches to hit. He is not going to get called out on pitches that were balls, and I just think that's going to improve him overall. I do think that part of what happened last season with his improvements, though, was because he was the designated hitter. He wasn't playing in the field every day. I think playing in the field has led to some injuries for him. I think part of why you saw that fall off on stolen bases is they're just like, yeah, it's not worth it. Like, we'd rather keep him in the lineup and not worry about him getting hurt at all. I can say as an elite hitter, I love watching him play. I love him at hit the ADP he goes at. I think he's going to be better in 2026 with the ABS.
Yeah, I can't disagree there. I love Seiya. I think he's great. I hope he DHs more than he plays the outfield, but we'll get to that in a minute of why that might not take place. That's kind of a back to Matt Shaw not playing. There's nowhere for him to play, and this is part of the problem, but we'll get there in a minute. Center field is not a problem. That's going to be locked down potentially for years to come. Pete Crow Armstrong, PCA, talk about bursting onto the scene in 2023. Like, we had a little cup of coffee in 2024 where he played 123 games. We didn't get the full experience. Last year we did 31 homers, 35 steals, 247, 91 runs, 95 RBIs. And that's with a second half that was pretty disastrous, all things considered. So, like, I'm the ADP at 33, so like in a 15-team league, that's an early third rounder. I've just been torn on him. Now it's falling. early in draft season, I was a second rounder and I couldn't do it, but I'm starting to turn my mind a little bit. But where are you at on PCA? Because I know he's a fan favorite, but let's look at the ball player here.
Well, the most important thing about Pete Carmstrong is he is the best center fielder that the Cubs have had probably since Reed Johnson, and he's better than Reed Johnson. He makes plays at Wrigley Field that I've never seen made. I got into some arguments on Twitter about this during award season, but I think he's a better defender than Sedin Rafaela. I think it was criminal to give the platinum glove to Rafaela over PCA. Like, if your argument is that Rafaela also plays middle infield and that makes him a better defender overall, like, maybe. But if your argument is that Rafaela is a better center fielder than PCA, you are wrong. And you just have to watch some footage of PCA and know a few things about Wrigley Field to understand why you are wrong. Because Pete Crow Armstrong makes catches that nobody else makes. Like, they get called 5% five-star catches or whatever, but that is because we don't have metrics for nobody else would catch this ball except this guy. And he does it multiple times. So if you go look at a five-star catch leaderboard and you look at opportunities and the percentage of catches made on five-star opportunities in Major League Baseball, the only player since the StatCast era that is over 50% on those chances is Pete Crow Armstrong. It's like Pete Crow Armstrong at 50% and then Kevin Kiermaier and Michael A. Taylor at like 30%. That is bonkers. That is like different stratosphere of defensive ability bonkers. And so he's going to play every single day because that glove is too valuable to not have out in the field. It's actually a reason that when we get to the pitchers we're going to talk about in a minute, you should bump every Cubs pitcher higher than you think you should because of the defense behind them. But I'll save that for the pitching side of things. So PCA is going to play. What he did in the first half last year, and you know, I'll just say, I think I was going to win the Bubba and the Bloom League overall until PCA's second half, because I was just riding that. I was in like first to third until probably late July, even with his fall off in the second half. And then I just couldn't replace it. I had like a 40-40 guy go blank. And I was like, where am I getting that on the waiver wire? And I still did okay, but I wasn't able to like finish in the top 10 like I hoped I would. PCA last season demonstrated that he can be streaky and bad for 2 months and have a 30-30 season.
Yep.
That's bonkers. That's worth the draft price he's currently at. But the problem with him in those first two rounds is you want your first two round picks to be guys you never have to worry about benching.
Yes.
And PCA has more of a Michael Harris the second bit to him that, like, when he's bad, he's borderline unrosterable. When he's good, he's a first rounder. And he's young enough that I think he could work his way into a first rounder, but I'm not sure. I'm curious how that will develop.
It's like, you're in my brain, Sarah. This is my problem with PCA. It's like, I think he's an elite talent. I had zero problems with that. The inconsistencies for the way I draft my teams, just if I had hair left, I'd have to pull my beard out, basically. Like, it's stressful with rostering him, because to your point, when it's bad, it's like, I remember shows last year, people like, listener question, should I drop PCA? And we're always like, if you could put him on your bench, please do. Do not drop him. But it's just like, I get not starting him. It's very difficult right now. To your Michael, like the Michael Harris comp, that's funny. Because yes, higher ceiling for PCA, but very similar thought processes of how to deal with him at the same time. All right, let's go to Nico Horner, who I absolutely loved the discount last year because he was injured. So he missed the Japan series, and then he came back just fine and still had a Nico Horner season. 7 home runs, 29 steals, hit .297. Like, I think the steals could probably go up, all things considered, but still an elite second base talent if you have power under control. ADP is around 110. So I'm always a Nico fan for the average and speed, but what are your thoughts on Nico Horner?
I think Nico's a steal where he goes in drafts this year, and I want him as my second baseman. The second base is a disaster. It is maybe my least favorite position to draft right now. You have to take one of like 3 second basemen early, or you have to go bargain shopping for guys who all have flaws. Nico is, you're not getting any power, but like, unless you took Ketel Marte or maybe like, I believe in Jose Altuve's bat still, like, you're not getting that much power from second base anyway. Nico's going to play every day. Like, I agree with you. The steals could go up. He's a shortstop at second base, which really gives the Cubs an up the middle defense that is unbelievable to watch. It's so fun. to watch their defense play. I think that we kind of slept on him 2 years ago because his average fell off into like the 278 range when he was hurt instead of being at that 290 range. I think he has a 300 season in him. I think he's one of these guys who's going to put up 310 or 315 at some point in time. And we're just going to be like, yeah, of course, Nico hit 300. He has the third lowest strikeout rate in baseball last year behind Luis Arraez and Justin Wilson. He is the guy you want up when you need somebody to make contact, and he's going to get a bazillion at bats with guys on base. So draft Nico as your second baseman if you can. And I think that ADP is just going to go up all draft season.
I fully agree. I like him quite a bit. Like I said, helped me a ton. I love him at auctions. You mentioned the listener, like, he goes so cheap in auctions, it feels like, compared to what he should go for, because he doesn't have the power. People kind of like overlook him. And so it's a part I really enjoy with building a team that way. Dansby Swanson, I've always had a soft, like, I, people are going to think I'm just giving Cubs love because you're on the show, but like, literally, you can ask Ryan, everybody, like, three straight years, I just draft Cubs because, like, I love their prices and what they can do. And I love Dansby. He went 24-20 last year. He's like, got a 2020 profile, or at least a 2015 profile, and doesn't crush you elsewhere. And he never costs much. His ADP is 145 right now, Sarah. So I literally, in a DC I'm in right now, he's my middle infielder. I just drafted him yesterday. So what's your thoughts on Dansby?
Dansby is the shortstop line for me. He's the exact same guy as Ian Happ for me, but at short. It's like, if I can get one of the shortstops ahead of Dansby, I'm happy. But if I haven't for whatever reason, Dansby is the guy that I'm targeting as my, he can play every day and I'm going to be okay with it. And he's going to go 20-20 and the average isn't going to be pretty, but it's fine. I think that my only problem with Dansby on the Cubs has ever been, I think they drafted him, or not drafted him, sorry, signed him, the deal they signed him to and the AAV of it and where they were at the time, they kind of signed him like they thought he was their star player. And I don't think Dansby's ever been the best guy on his team, or maybe like in Little League or like college or something, but like, he is best when he's the third or fourth best guy on his team. And I think the Cubs have built a situation now where he is the third or fourth best guy on the team, and that's perfect. That's exactly what Dansby should be. Hit 240, go 20-20. But maybe my favorite thing about him, which is only relevant to fantasy in terms of his playing time, but it's part of why he plays every day and is so consistent, so I think it is relevant. Defensively, I was worried for when the Cubs signed him that he, I thought he had a weak arm at shortstop, because his arm speed Statcast metric is one of the lowest at shortstop. But watching him play, I've decided it's something else. I think he only goes as hard as he has to. He never overthrows a ball. He never throws the ball too hard. Like, he gets exactly the right amount of English on it to make sure he gets the double play and nothing else. And that in and of itself is a skill. Like, understanding what your max out is going to keep you healthy and on the field longer. And I really love Dansby.
No, I'm with you, man. It's crazy. He's going to be 33, which I guess he has been around that long when you really think about it. He's the number one pick for the D-backs years ago. Got traded to Atlanta. Now he's in Chicago, but doesn't really act like it when he's out there. I'll say that much.
Well, let me say something on the number one, the first round pick situation, because one of the things that is fascinating about this Cubs team, they have a badonkadonk number of first rounders on this roster. This is like Alex Bregman, Dansby Swanson, Nico Horn. Like, this is a team of elite floor players. And they may not have some of the, like, there's not a 50 home run guy here, right? But they got like six guys that are going to hit 20 and three that could hit 30. So I don't know.
Well, they're going to hit like 260, 270. So they're going to be able to, like, put runs together too, which is going to be good. And like you said, we'll get to the pitching where they've improved a few things, and you might not need to score a bazillion runs to make it work. Like, they're building a team that can compete, as you know. So this is actually a pretty good ball club. Before we get to the DH situation, I want to hit the catchers first. And this is a tough one because I went into last year a humongous Miguel Amaya fan. Obviously, I had the injury, missed a lot of the season. Carson Kelly comes in, is a beast. That slowed down, but he still was formidable throughout the season. Amaya came back. Kelly still pretty much kept the lead role. How do you see that going right now between Kelly and Amaya? Because personally, and it's again, personally, I'm not a coach. I like Amaya more, but I'm a realist. Kelly had the gig to end the season, essentially.
So Carson Kelly is really interesting to me. I'm a big fan. I've mentioned this at PitchCon and other places before. I love the 15-game rolling charts that you can do at FanGraphs. And I love looking at multiple years of a player with those. with different things like their K rate, their WRC plus. And the reason I love those is because if you look at 15 game rolling charts over the series of a couple seasons, you can see if a player's floor has shifted and you can see if their ceiling has shifted in a way that a lot of other charts don't show you. And what Carson Kelly demonstrated last year that I think is telling and interesting and important is his floor is higher than what you thought it was. And I think we missed it because he had like some of those some injuries with the Diamondbacks. But we kind of all forgot that he was supposed to be like the elite hitting catcher who was going to replace Yadi Molina someday. And then he just kind of had a bunch of injury seasons that didn't happen. And we all kind of thought, well, he's a backup. No, he's a really good hitting catcher. And the Cubs remembered that and they got him to that place. That said, Miguel Amaya is also a really good hitting catcher. And the Cubs want him to be their starting catcher. Like, he is the guy who is under team control. He is the guy who they developed. He is the Miguel Amaya being who he was is the reason they felt like they could move on from a Wilson Contreras, which is, you know, I still think that was a mistake, but I understand why they didn't think that was a mistake. I think this is a even more even playing time split than other people do. I think that Miguel Amaya could wind up with more playing time at the end of the season than Carson Kelly, because the Cubs are more invested in Amaya being their guy over the longer term than they are in Kelly. But I think Kelly demonstrated that he had the ability early. And frankly, there were some of those games, like some of these two home run Carson Kelly games, where he really just put the team on his back and won them on his own. And I don't think Amaya has that in him just yet.
That's fair. That's very fair. So like when I've been doing my evaluations this offseason, I kind of picture like the Braves, it was like 4 or 5 years ago when they had Travis d'Arnaud and it might've been Sean Murphy at the time still, mm-hmm. or somebody else. And they literally, it was almost a split down the middle. Like they just kind of, it was Suzuki and Travis d'Arnaud. That was the two. It was Kurt Suzuki.
And William Contreras.
William Contreras. That was when he was a prince. Now he's a king in Milwaukee. There's a difference. But they kind of just 50-50'd it almost. That feels like what the Cubs might do.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that it wouldn't surprise me to see either one of those guys wind up on top. I will say I like both of these guys for where they go in drafts. And if I have, so, you know, I mentioned that Dansby's my shortstop line, like Hap is my outfield line. My catcher line of guys I'm really interested in is probably Alejandro Kirk. And if like I have not gotten my second catcher by the Alejandro Kirk line, I am perfectly happy to wait to get Miguel Amaya at the end.
And the thing is with Amaya and or Kelly, God forbid if one of them gets hurt again this year, then one of them becomes really, really great for fantasy because that playing time would be outstanding. Unless, and I don't think it will happen, but maybe the DH who was a catcher but probably should DH, let's be real about it, Moises Ballesteros has an impact on anything this year. Everybody loved him when he got called up. He hit .298, two homers in 20 games, small sample, but we know he's got some pop. Hit for decent average throughout the minors. Going to be 22, super young. ADP is just inside the top 400 for him. I think it's because of concerns of playing time because we really don't know. What are your thoughts on Ballesteros this year?
Ballesteros is the designated hitter, and you are going to love him. I love him so much. So I already knew Moises Ballesteros was going to be like one of my guys. Like, I don't know, man. I have a thing for Latino catchers who rake. Like, it's a whole William Contreras, Wilson Contreras. Like, there's a trend here, okay? That said, when Moises Ballesteros got called up, he's sitting in the dugout at Wrigley, and the pregame show asks him a question about who he has modeled his catching and hitting game off of. And he says, Salvador Perez. I'm like, well, that's really interesting because Salvador Perez also has like a similar timeline to Moises Ballesteros. He was a real young minor league guy playing in his 17, 18, 19-year-old seasons in the complex league, like worked his way up, got his first taste of the majors at 21. Like, let's do a comparison, Salvador Perez and Moises Ballesteros, and see what you get. And what I honestly thought I was going to find is that Salvi would have more power and Ballesteros would get on base more and have a better average. And I was wrong. Moises Ballesteros at age to level was better than Salvador Perez at everything, at every level. Better average, better on base, better walk rate, better strikeout rate, more power at every level than Salvador Perez. That is crazy. Now, Salvador Perez is a better catcher, and Ballesteros is probably going to be a DH. So I think that at this point, they kind of go on different paths because, you know, catching is a really, really hard gig, and it takes away from players' offensive ability to be able to maintain that catching ability. I don't think Ballesteros is going to be a 40 home run guy anytime in his career. That's not the hit tool he has. But the hit tool he has is in some ways better because he doesn't strike out very much. He walks a ton, and he hits with doubles power and a bit of home run power. So you're looking at a guy who could get like 20 bombs, but still slug like 450, 500 because he's getting extra base hits, and his on-base percentage is probably going to be 350 or better. I love Moises Ballesteros. The very last thing I will say about Moises Ballesteros, when he first came up, he struck out like one time in his first 24 major league plate appearances as a 21-year-old in a playoff race. That is crazy. That is an elite bat. And I think the Cubs have an opportunity here to develop a designated hitter, like a David Ortiz type of designated hitter. And I'm not sure he'll ever have the power ceiling that Ortiz had, but he might be able to have a JD Martinez ceiling, like 25, 30 home runs, hits 300. Like, who wouldn't love that? Which brings us back to where do the at-bats go? Because Moises Ballesteros doesn't really have a position he can play. He's not a very good catcher. He can kind of play first base, but he's also like 5'7". And like, let's just be real, that's not a thing that's happening in Major League Baseball. So he's kind of got a DH or bust. There's a non-zero chance he will get catcher eligibility if, God forbid, Carson Kelly or Miguel Amaya has to take some time off and they don't want to put him on the injured list or whatever. I think they don't want him to catch.
Yeah.
They want him to hit. And the kid can hit.
Yeah, no, that's what it seems like, because even when the injuries were happening last year, they still weren't calling him up to catch.
Well, like, Reese McGuire yeah. was catching.
Yeah, it's like that was kind of the moment where you really knew this was not a thing for him right now. So, all right, good to know on Moises Ballesteros. Let's head to the mound with the Cubs, who, again, Matthew Boyd last year out of nowhere. I mean, out of nowhere, because it was 39 innings in 2024. He's battled injuries. He hasn't thrown 100 innings since 2019. Through 179 innings last year, was outstanding. Like, great. ADP is 228 because people still don't believe he can stay healthy, which is fair, I think. But he's going to pitch for Team USA, which I really don't love to see. Where are you at here on Matthew Boyd? Because, again, amazing season last year. I don't trust it at all.
Okay, so Matthew Boyd won me leagues last year on the following theory, which I think is still actionable for 2026. I did not believe he was going to pitch 179 innings. I thought he was going to throw 80 innings, and I thought they were going to be really good. And I trusted the Cubs to understand when to pull the plug on Matthew Boyd. And so I figured I'd draft him, I get the 80 really good innings, and then whenever Matthew Boyd turns into an injured pumpkin, I drop him and I pick up somebody else and start streaming that spot. I never had to do that because Matthew Boyd just kept going. Now, I think there's a couple of things going on there. One is Matthew Boyd would not have been Matthew Boyd last season without the Cubs defense behind him. He was getting a ton of run suppression, man. Like, I'm just like, one of the most interesting things about the Chicago Cubs, and this has been true for multiple years, and you can just go back and look at it. Almost every pitcher on the Cubs exceeds their FIP with their ERA. Their ERA is better than their FIP because the defense is doing such a good job behind them that they are getting half a run to a full run better results than they should get with the pitches they are throwing. Now, if you're a team looking to trade for Matthew Boyd or to trade for Jameson Taillon, that should be a red flag for you. But if you're a fantasy baseball player who is looking for values at the end of drafts, you should draft those guys because the defense behind them is not changing. Like, the defense behind them is still going to be Nico Horner and Dansby Swanson and Pete Crow Armstrong. That's great. Like, it's going to suppress runs. So I'm still into Matthew Boyd. I'm into him at price. I'm still planning on dropping him when he turns into a pumpkin. But if he doesn't turn into a pumpkin, I'll just keep him on my roster until I have to drop him.
That's a very fair approach to go with, because most people would be angry, but it makes sense, especially at that price. You're not paying a fortune for him. You mentioned Jameson Taillon. We'll just hop there real quick, because he is the epitome of one of my favorite phrases of boring is beautiful, which is what he does. He's going to give you like 160-ish innings, maybe a little more. You never know. But the ratios are almost always intact. Not going to light the radar gun on fire, not going to rack up the Ks, but very serviceable to your point. And with balls in play a lot, defense helps. ADP is 326. I'm pretty sure by the sounds of it, you're on board with this.
Oh, it's a great place to go shopping for wins late in a draft. Because Jamison Tyon will not just pitch. He's going to pitch into the sixth inning. I mean, I actually, one of my favorite things to do, I live about five blocks from Wrigley. I'll pick up a single. And the start, the guy who starts I never miss are Jamison Tyon starts. Because I think if anybody on this Cubs team is going to throw a no-hitter, it's going to be Jamison Tyon. He's going to have some day where it's 55 degrees in April and the Cubs will let him keep going because he's Jamison Tyon and he's a horse. And the defense will make some amazing plays. And before you know it, he'll have thrown nine innings and he'll have struck out like four guys, but he'll have a no-hitter. And I never miss a JMO start on that theory. I've never seen a no-hitter in person. And he's going to get wins. He's going to get wins and he's going to have good ratios. He's not going to get strikeouts. So, you know, get your strikeouts somewhere else. But I think Jamison Tyon is a pretty good value where he goes for wins.
Yep. No, I'm with you there. I think he's a great DC play, great 15-team play. Martin Sokolsky actually wrote him up in a quality starts piece recently because, to your point, he's going to go at least six. Like, it's boring, but it's very, very beautiful to me. All right, one of the other new additions to the Cubs, you mentioned the Owen Casey trade. Edward Cabrera comes to town, and I've always been a big Cabrera fan. I'm not alone in this. It just comes down to health and command with Cabrera because – pure filth. And last year had the ERA of 3.53 through 137 innings in the bigs, which was a career high. And right now his ADP is about 185, Sarah. So what are your thoughts on Cabrera's full first season in Wrigley?
I really like Edward Cabrera at Wrigley Field, and I really like him on this Cubs team. So the thing that jumps out at me and jumped out at some of our friends, so I want to give a shout out to the people who did this analysis before me, but Nick Pollock and Eno Saris both talked about this when the trade happened. Edward Cabrera started throwing his sinker more than he threw his four-seam in 2025. And part of the reason he had better command numbers is because that four-seam is a walk-fest pitch for him. He can't control it. It winds up resulting in a bunch of men on base, and then he doesn't strike guys out, and then it's a disaster, right? But when he moved to the sinker, he could throw it for strikes at least, which meant even though it was getting hammered, he was able to get people out, and he was not walking the land. I think that with the Cubs defense behind him, that sinker becomes a better pitch. It's not like he's giving up a bazillion home runs now. Do I love Edward Cabrera with the wind blowing out someday at Wrigley? No, probably not. But like, I do love him for strikeouts. His off speed and breaking stuff it's stupid. Like, it is so fun to watch. Like, that changeup what is that changeup? Can we call it a changeup? It feels like a pitch all of its own. His slider is ridiculous. His curveball is ridiculous. So the last thing I'll say about Edward Cabrera, he actually does something for the Cubs that I don't think they've had since Yu Darvish, which is all of their pitchers are kind of similar.
Yeah.
Like when you add Justin Steele back into this pitch, it's kind of similar, right? It's like we throw 90 to 94. We're really good at tunneling. We hit the corners. We induce weak contact. We have an elite defense behind us. We'll strike out some guys, but like you're looking at 7K per nine or 9K per nine, not 11, 12, not elite strikeout numbers. We're just going to let our defense get guys out and we're going to do it in a non-flashy way. And that is fine, except when you're at your third or fourth game of a series against a team and they've seen three guys that all look the same. I think that gets easier to hit by game three. Edward Cabrera is not the same as all these other guys. Like all these other guys are going to go 91, 92 and trick you a bit. And Edward Cabrera is going to come at you with a changeup and a slider that should not exist. And then you're going to have to get used to Justin Steele again. It's going to be great.
Yeah, no, that's a great point because it is a lot of similar pitchers, right or left-handed, doesn't matter. They're kind of soft tossing it, pitching to contact for the most part. That's what you're getting. So very good point on that one. Cade Horton, one of the best pitchers in the second half of baseball. Same with Trevor Rogers, were 1-2 last year. Horton pitched 118 innings with the Cubs, 2.67 ERA. You know, strikeouts are a little lower than you desire, and the metrics suggested he was kind of lucky, but still very good. And the pitch mix did change. I talked about him at FBAS. Like, there is a lot to like with Horton, but I also understand the concerns with Horton. ADP is around 200 right now. So it's a great price, but what are your thoughts on Cade Horton?
I've been drafting Cade Horton all over the place because I think that Cade Horton did not get the respect that he should have out of the second half that he had. So I ran some numbers at the end of the season for the fantasy feud game that we were playing at First Pitch Arizona. And in the second half, according to the Fangraphs auction calculator, Cade Horton was the best starting pitcher in baseball. Now, there are reasons, I agree with you, there are reasons some of that is lucky and some of that is weird, and he was only throwing like five innings at a stretch because they were really, really trying to keep his arm healthy through the postseason. He has had some injury concerns. But that, I think those bumper rails are going to be off next year. I mean, he might have an innings cap if he's, you know, looking at 150 innings in August or something like that. But he's going to get 150, 160 innings. He is going, they think he is their second best starter on this team, maybe their first best starter on this team. And they think he's an ace. You know, people were really concerned with the lack of what the Cubs did at the trade deadline last year because they were short a starter. But the reason that they didn't make some of the moves for like a Joe Ryan or a Mackenzie Gore, those types of things, is because those teams wanted Cade Horton in the return, and the Cubs view Cade Horton as one of the building blocks of their rotation going forward. And I am really glad they didn't pull the trigger on those deals if Cade Horton had to be part of them. Let me put this slightly differently, and this is going to be a little bit controversial because I know he is not this way for anybody else. He is my favorite sophomore pitcher coming into next season. So like everybody else is like Cam Schlitter, Treya Savage, like, and I love those guys too. Jacob Mizorowski is a freak. Like, I don't know how he does what he does. I love him too. Jonah Tong is really interesting. Connelly Early, really interesting. I think Cade Horton is better and more proven than any of them. And I like guys who have done it before. So I think Cade Horton's kind of a steal where he goes. And I've been drafting him quite a bit.
No, I get it. He hasn't cost nearly what all those other guys cost. So you got that going for you as well. If he can, I'm just a big strikeout nerd. Like, I need strikeouts, so it's tough. But his price isn't bad at the same time. So I get the appeal on both sides of it. And he's young, so if anybody could improve, I could trust him to improve over some of these other guys we've already talked about in the Cubs rotation. The other guy that I've always had a soft spot for, you have as well, and I've always somehow butchered his last name, even though I've been told a million times, Shota is on the team. It depends on the day. It's either Imanaga or Imanaga, or I'm all over the board with him. So I apologize already, but Shota is just awesome. And it's a weird dynamic because the Cubs didn't feel like they wanted him back, that he came back because he took the qualifying offer. There's a lot of stuff there, but 144 innings, had a little injury last year. Ratios are still good. He's a whip machine if you ever need one. And his ADP is 175. So a lot of these Cubs going late in the pitching department. Where are we at on Shota this season?
Yeah, that's funny about the pronunciation thing. There was a story here early when he first got to Chicago where when he would get his coffee order, he just told them his name was Mike rather than trying to like explain to them. And that's so funny. Like the bobblehead they did for Shota last year has a cup of coffee in his locker and it just says Mike on it. Because he didn't want to mess around with teaching people how to pronounce his name. I think Shota's great. I think that what we saw from now, admittedly, Shota down the stretch last year was problematic and maybe like everybody's worst nightmare from when he came over from Japan of like, oh my God, these fly balls are home runs. These fly balls are home runs and he's only got the three pitches and it's not really fooling anybody. And that's a problem. I think that some of what was going on there was tipping some of those pitches. I think some of what was going on there was they were working on some mechanical things with him that hadn't really come to fruition yet. I heard through the grapevine that one of the reasons he took the qualifying offer is he wanted to reset his value, but he wanted to do it with a team of people who knew him and he trusted the Cubs pitching staff to do that and to understand how to do that. Like, he didn't want to go start over with somebody else. And I think that what you're going to see from Shota is basically a contract year from a guy who's not new here. Like, he's new in MLB, but he's not new to pitching and he understands the score. His nickname is the throwing philosopher for a reason. He's a super fun guy. I think that Shota's probably going to exceed expectations. I don't know that he's going to come in like he did in 2025, where he looked like Fernando Valenzuela come back from, you know, like his first eight starts at Wrigley were the stuff of legends and they had Showtime on the marquee and it was one of the most fun things I've ever seen. But so I don't think you're going to get that, but I don't think you're going to get what you got at the end of the season either. I agree with you. His whip is always going to be great. And I think, you know, he doesn't have to be the second best pitcher on this team. He has to be like the fourth best pitcher on this team. And that's going to be, that's going to give him some freedom to work on some things too.
Yeah, for sure. Like I'm hoping he figures it out. Cause yeah, that initial shoulder run was epic. Things of welcome to Chicago epic stuff. So love seeing that. Real quick, you mentioned his name a few times. We've seen the videos all over social media. Justin Steele is working his way back. His ADP is 385, 390 right now. So strictly a DC play more than anything, but he seems like he's ahead of schedule. Who knows what that is? What are you at least hearing on Justin Steele's like timeline to maybe bring him back to our fantasy world?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's way ahead of schedule. I heard at Cubs convention he's thrown off a mound.
That's a video of that the other
crazy. The word on the street there when he had, and I don't remember the exact terminology, and I'm not going to risk butchering it because it's important. He did not have a traditional Tommy John surgery. It was like it was more of like a revision type of situation.
Was it the brace procedure?
I don't remember. But it was not, it's not going to be as long of a recovery time as what you would traditionally think with Tommy John. And I think that was important to Justin Steele's people getting that out there because he did have Tommy John once before in like 2014, 2015, when he was in the Cubs minor league system. And I think they wanted it to be extremely clear that this was not like he's having a second full Tommy John situation. That is helpful both on the injury recovery side, which you can see the videos yourself. He's ahead of schedule. It was really funny early this offseason when I was drafting. I saw some people basically saying he was behind schedule, that he just wouldn't be back until the second half and stuff. I'm like, I literally just saw him throw
exactly
on his Twitter. And so there was a period from about November till mid-January where you could get a discount on Justin Steele in a gladiator format or in a DC that was insane because people thought he was going to be injured until like July or something. And I don't think that's the case. I think he probably joins the team in like May or June. I think they've got a really deep rotation right now. So they're going to wait until he's healthy to bring him back. And then I'll be curious to see how he does. Because Justin Steele, if you remember when he came up, was kind of a fringy number 4 or 5 guy. And then he worked on how he located that slider and his fastball for basically he gets multiple pitches out of 2 pitches, which is it's kind of hard to articulate. But Alex Fast did a really good video of this that you should check out. So he has turned 2 pitches into 4 pitches, basically, and been elite at it. And he's taken some tips from John Lester, who had similar stuff to make that work really well. If he's healthy, I think he steps right back into, you know, ERA exceeds his FIP, 9K per 9, that guy. And I love Justin Steele. So, yeah, look for him long about, I would say, right before Memorial Day.
Okay. Yeah, based on the videos, I was thinking sometime in May as well. So that makes sense. Like, he's moving along nicely. I guess time will tell where that fits in. We always say, oh, there's 6 mans, but someone always, something yeah. happens. So I'll just leave it. I'm not going to wish injuries, but yes, something happens all the time. Closer, Daniel Palencia was outstanding last year, 22 saves, good ratios, great to watch. You know, they had other guys off and on in the back end when Palencia was hurt, before Palencia, a lot of moving targets in that bullpen for a couple of years. It feels like it's been up and down. It feels like it's Palencia's world, but they keep bringing in other good back end arms. So, Sarah, how are we approaching this? Because right now, Palencia has an ADP about 110, and obviously closers are pushed up right now. But where are we at on the Cubs closing situation?
I like Daniel Palencia as the Cubs closer. I do not like him as my closer 1 in a draft. I want him as my closer 2.
Yep.
And the drafts where I've had to take him as a closer 1, I usually feel like heart palpitations of this might not work. He could get like 7 saves. So the thing about Palencia is he throws 102, which is great. He has closer energy. He comes into the game and he's like, you know, he literally comes into the game to Gasolina. They have like the whole montage and everything, and he's throwing gas. I mean, it's amazing. He doesn't strike out as many guys as you think he would strike out for throwing 102. So he gets hit a little bit more than you would think he would with that type of velocity, because he doesn't have quite the movement on his pitches that some other guys who throw with that type of velocity have. My bigger concern with Palencia, he has had injury issues, both in the minors and in the majors. And what happened to him at the end of last year is, and I was at this game, it was one of the worst moments of the season. He kind of like grabbed his shoulder in the middle of an outing where he was getting shelled. And I was like, oh my God. And I was sure he was done. I think it was against the Mets in like September. I was like, he's out. He's done. The Cubs have no closer. That is a shoulder injury. We will not see Daniel Palencia again until late 2026, maybe 2027, if we're lucky. And then he was back. And I was kind of stunned, but also he didn't come back as the closer. He came back in these like high leverage situations in the playoffs where he would face like the 4, 5, 6 guys. And I don't know if he's the closer, and I'm like 90% certain he's the closer. I do think, though, both Hunter Harvey, who you have on your list, but also Phil Maton are guys that the Cubs think if Daniel Palencia got hurt, we could move this guy up and it would be okay. And lastly, I will say, I think people are sleeping on Ben Brown's role in this bullpen because Ben Brown is born to be a closer. Yep. Ben Brown has 2 pitches that are wipeout pitches. And what we have seen, they tried to make him a starter and get him like comfortable going 6 innings, and he couldn't, right? Like there were games where he would give up no hits through 5 innings and then just get shelled in the 6th. And it didn't work, right? But Ben Brown in the bullpen could become an elite arm really, really fast. And I am not sure if Daniel Palencia is a better closer than Ben Brown. Now, Ben Brown is not being drafted as a closer. You should not draft him as a closer right now. But if you're in a DC and Ben Brown is sitting there in like the whatever round, I don't even know what his ADP is right now.
ADP 515.
Yeah, dude, Ben Brown is a steal in a DC. I love him so much.
Yeah, he's been a favorite target of mine and others. I can't remember what episode in the offseason. Ryan and I, it was like a Bloom board or something, like first test something. And his name was on the board. So we started digging in on him. And we were just like, what the heck are they doing? Like, as we were both just like, he's a closer. Like, he's got 2 pitches. Might have been a pitch mix board or something. And it just popped. Like, wow, he's filthy. That might not have the longevity or the repertoire to be a starter. But to your point, as a closer, pooh, like, he's very, very good.
So the other thing with Ben Brown to keep in mind is, like, he's still stretched out. And so for the early part of the season, he's probably not going to be one of those 7, 8, 9 guys, but he's going to be the middle reliever who gets a win if a middle reliever gets a win. And he strikes out a ton of guys. So, like, honestly, if you're in even a standard redraft, not like a gladiator situation or something, but like a, you know, regular 15 teamer, throwing a dart with your last pick at Ben Brown is not the worst idea in the world, because he could be one of those middle relief guys like a Matt Strom who help your ratios, give you some strikeouts, and then wind up becoming a closer later. And it's like, I don't know, man, I love Ben Brown.
Yep, no, I'm with you. I was glad you kind of written down on my paper here. I'm like, I'm gonna ask you about Ben, but you nailed it, because it opened our eyes, right? And I'm like, whoa, like, why is he not here? Like, we love Palencia, but it's just like, you got this toy right here, so make it happen. All right, let's talk prospects. The Cubs have had plenty. They've come through the system. They just got traded Owen Casey. Anything that could be an impact this season from the minor league department for Chicago?
Yeah. So a guy that I think people are sleeping on, and I'm trying to pull up his stat page right now because I didn't do that before the show like I should have. But they have a first base prospect named Jonathan Long, who obviously is blocked by our friend Michael Bush. But at the end of last season, they were giving him reps at third base because Matt Shaw was having so many issues. And Jonathan Long can hit, man. I'm trying to the exact slash line, and my computer is being really slow because I'm trying to do it while I'm streaming. But Jonathan Long had an absolutely outstanding season at AAA last year.
I got it for you. 305, 20 homers, 2 steals, 91 RBIs, yeah.
Yeah, the kid can hit. So I was a little... This is also part of why I was a little stunned that they went and got Tyler Austin, because I'm like, you don't need Tyler Austin. You have Jonathan Long. I think Jonathan Long probably makes his major league debut this season. I think that he does some damage as a first base corner bat type of guy. And I also think that Jonathan Long could be a trade chip for the Cubs, because those are the types of numbers that you throw into a deal when you're trying to get somebody else. So keep an eye on Jonathan Long, whether he makes his debut for the Cubs or somebody else. I think he's going to be in the majors sometime this year.
Love it. Love it. All right. Last question I have for you, Sarah. What are your expectations for the 2026 Chicago Cubs?
Hold on. Before I answer that question, let me say one more thing. Pitching prospect that you need to keep an eye on, Jackson Wiggins. Jackson Wiggins is a dude. Like, he is this year's Cade Horton, and he might actually be better than Cade Horton. He's the other guy that the Cubs wouldn't let go of at the deadline last year. And so made it to AAA last year. He will make his major league debut if he's healthy sometime this season. Keep an eye out when Jackson Wiggins gets called up.
Beautiful. Now, your projections for 2026.
I think this is the best team in the National League Central, and I don't think it's close. I think part of that is because the National League Central is an inherently weak division. The Reds haven't really done very much this year. Like, now, don't get me wrong. They brought up, like, Sal Stewart last year. I think Sal Stewart's extremely interesting. He's one of my favorite guys to keep an eye on in drafts, and I've been targeting him in places. But, like, they needed to add to that team, and I'm like, who have you added? And it just seems like they're a cuspy playoff team that didn't add much. The Cardinals are in full teardown rebuild mode. Godspeed to Wilson Contreras now on my AL team. Thank you, St. Louis. That was for doing me a personal solid there. But like the Cardinals are just going to be extremely bad. I was talking in the GLARF DM about the Cardinals. I don't think I've ever seen a rotation on a Major League Baseball team where I'm like, I don't want any of these guys on my fantasy team. Like I don't want Matthew Liberatore. I don't want Quinn Matthews. Who are these guys? Like Hunter Dobbins might be the most interesting guy who pitches for the Cardinals this year. And they just traded for him from the Red Sox. So I don't know, man, it's a collection of pitchers to stream against. The Pirates are interesting, more interesting than they've been maybe ever. But they're the Pirates and they still don't really have the bats called up to the majors that I feel like they're a threat to the Cubs, which leaves the Cubs and the Brewers. It leaves the Cubs and the Brewers just like it was last year.
It's a yearly tradition.
You cannot sleep on the Milwaukee Brewers. They are the Tampa Bay Rays of the NL Central. They're very good at developing guys. And even after they trade guys, they develop new guys. And it's like, where did Jacob Mizorowski come from? I don't know, but he's here and he's ridiculous. I love that they, God, I was so, well, love, hate. When they got Brandon Sproat in the Freddie Peralta trade, I was like, God damn it. I was like, I don't need Brandon Sproat pitching for the Brewers for the next 6 years, right? Like, but here we are. But I think the Cubs are clearly the best team in the Central. I think the defense raises the floor for them. I think the pitching is not your elite SP1 in a fantasy team, but they got a bunch of SP3 to SP4 guys who you want on your fantasy team. I think the bullpen is better than you think it is. And I think the bats are all above average. So, you know, it's kind of like what was that thing they used to do on NPR where it was like Lake Wobegon, where the children are all above average or whatever. The Cubs are that team. That is who the Cubs are. They're the Lake Wobegon Cubs.
Beautiful, beautiful. I think they are the favorites of the division. They should be the favorites in the division. And if they can stay healthy, they could challenge the big bad boys in Southern California, I think, because someone has to, please.
They are built to beat the Dodgers. Okay, I think they would have done a better job against the Dodgers than the Brewers did in the NLCS. We'll never know, but that Cubs team is built to give the Dodgers a run for their money in a way the Brewers are not.
Completely agree. All right, before we sign off, Sarah, always a pleasure. Remind everybody where they can find you because you're a busy person in Cubland and just baseball land in general.
Yeah, you can find my Cubs writing at BleedCubbyBlue.com. I'm writing over there a couple of times a week, do some BCB After Dark stuff and most of our statistical analysis. And then over at Baseball HQ, I've got the NL Central Playing Time Tomorrow column. And then I just chat with my friends on podcasts like this.
Yes, it's always a blast to chat with you, see you in Arizona whenever we have a chance. So it's always good, my friend. I hope you stay well and stay warm in Chicago. Yeah. And until next time, we will chat again.
Awesome. Thanks.
But all right, everybody, this is Benched with Bubba, episode 824, your 2026 Chicago Cubs team preview. Catch you all next time.